Culinary Arts at SPAC events feature the talents of both local and visiting chefs, along with a visiting guest cookbook author who share their expertise and insights alongside their food. WAMC On the Road has teamed up with SPAC for these events, which are presented in partnership with lead sponsor Franklin Square Market. The initiative is produced by culinary consultants Pam Abrams and Kevin London. Attendees eat, and then the cookbook's author or authors are interviewed. Barbecue legend James Beard, award-winning author and host of PBS's Project Fire, Stephen Reichlin, kicked off the culinary arts at SPAC fall season with a sizzling celebration of the griddle. His latest book is Project Griddle. I spoke with him on October 7th.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming to our very comfortable stools, Stephen Reichlin. Well, hello. How are you?
I am fantastic. I'm totally in love with Saratoga Springs. I've never been here before. I arrived after two flights on very small planes and an hour and a half drive from Rutland, but I'm smitten. You know, not only is it a beautiful city to look at, but there's a warmth and a connection that you sense here that you sense very rarely in places. So, bravo. Can't wait to come back.
Excellent. We're so glad you are here. So glad you are here tonight. We sold out this place on a Tuesday night in October. Man. And there's baseball on. That's amazing. Really great. I have to say, I am such a fan of yours. You've been on our radio show many, many times over the years. And when did you start? Well, your first book came out what year?
Well, my very first book came out in would have been 78 or 79 with a fly-by-night publisher from Seattle. It was called Dining in Boston, supposedly recipes from the 21 best restaurants in the city. And the book came back from the printer missing two signatures, which is equal to about 64 pages. So any reasonable publisher, of course, would have recalled it and reprinted it. And this guy put it out minus 64 pages, and I had to take the hit.
Well, I'm glad you're not bitter about it.
No, it's been a long learning experience.
Maybe want to talk that one out. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's been a long learning experience. But I think probably my first barbecue book was The Barbecue Bible. And that celebrated its 25th anniversary last year. So
that's amazing.
That's pretty amazing. You know, still in print.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's the thing, right? That is what's impressive. I'm going to name drop here, and I apologize. But like, I remember talking to Kurt Vonnegut, and I said, "What are you proudest of?" He said that my books are actually still in print. I mean, for you, and especially for a cookbook author, to have a book still in print, that's great. That's amazing.
You know, 8 of my barbecue books are still in print,
yep.
And I'm flabbergasted. I'm amazed every day and grateful every day. Thanks to people like you, by the way. I know a lot of people brought their dog-eared, beaten-up, spine-broken books, and nothing makes me happier than to see those because you're using them.
What brought you to barbecue in the first place of thinking that this could be, because I assume in the first when you wrote the Bible, I mean, once you write the Bible, you're like, well, what more can I do, right?
New Testament?
Yeah,
the
right,
Talmud?
Exactly. Yeah, we're going to go full out on this. But it is, did you think you would keep writing that it would ultimately become your beat?
Well, that's a long story too. First of all, I have a degree in French literature, so that's sort of an odd training to write about global grilling, barbecue and grilling, but I have a Barbecue Bible came, let's say I'd done a whole series of books on high flavor, low fat cooking. I did a whole series of books on Boston restaurants. I used to be the restaurant critic for Boston Magazine. There was a brief detour into Caribbean cooking. I met my wife who was from Miami, moved to Miami. I wrote a book called Miami Spice. And that actually connected me with my publisher, Workman Publishing. It's been a wonderful partnership.
Yeah.
And they were the ones after Miami Spice that came out, my first 100,000 copy bestseller. And I had this crazy idea, Barbecue Bible. So I remember where I was sitting, what I was wearing. It was kind of the first non-humid, cool day in Miami. And this idea popped into my head, and it was accompanied by a voice that I heard that said, "Follow the fire." The idea was that I was to travel around the world, document how people grill in different countries, and turn it into a book. So I dashed off a book proposal, and I had a contract the next week. Now, usually book proposals take months to write, and contracts take months more to get. So obviously the stars were in line. The publisher, I think the publisher actually saw the potential of the book more than I did.
What was it about the to me, the key to what you just said was the fact that this would be of the world, not just what we would think of as a barbecue cookbook for the United States, but something about how, because that is a journey, but also a fascinating history of cooking throughout the world.
Oh, man, was it a journey. So I get this contract, and I thought, okay, well, this is great. I'll visit 10 countries, 100 recipes, bang it out, and then, I can get back to writing about low-fat food, because that's what I was known for at the time. Well, it became an obsession, and the one-year project turned into a four-year project, and although I had gotten a substantial advance, I spent it in the first 9 months, so I wrote four other books during that period to fund the research for Barbecue Bible. Finally, into the fourth year, my editor called me, plaintiff, and said, "Stephen, whatever page is in your printer, pull it out, send it up. This madness has to stop. We have to get a book out." Well, needless to say, we were late. We were years late. We also missed Memorial Day and Father's Day, which are the two biggest grilling holidays of the year. Barely squeaked out in time for July 4th. But I was lucky because everybody had written their barbecue stories already. So the following year, the book got treated as a brand new book. So we got 2 years of publicity. And that's how I got into barbecue.
What was it, do you think, that struck a chord with people? I mean, there certainly had been barbecue books before. I would, obviously, there is your, the idea that you had and your skill and hand in this. Also, Workman does a wonderful job with the pictures and how it's laid out. But of what it was that struck a chord with people that said, yeah, this is the book I need when it comes to my barbecue adventures.
Well, actually, first of all, when the book came out in 1998, there were not a lot of barbecue cookbooks. There were actually only one other book. It was called The Thrill of the Grill by Chris Schlesinger. Great book. But I don't think anybody had ever done a global survey of grilling. And I think that was one factor. Calling it the Barbecue Bible, I mean, Bible certainly suggests comprehensiveness. Peter Workman, he loved books that were called category killers, big, door stoppers. Barbecue Bible is, I think, 550 pages, something like that. And he wanted a book that would say more about the subject than had ever been written. And I think that was a factor. Nobody had ever done a global grilling book before. And I think that was a factor. And then, Workman, they're an amazing publishing house. I'd never been on a book tour before, Miami Spice, and the Barbecue Bible book tour, I don't remember if it was 30 cities or 50 cities, but we really got out there.
So bring us now to Project Griddle. And this is, how did you... I assume this is something that you've integrated into that you've been using a griddle for a long time. Is that true?
Yes and no. So the way this book originated, it was blame it on a steak and blame it on a very expensive steak. Now, y'all know what Japanese A5 Wagyu is, right? It's steak that is so generously marbled that if you look at it raw, it looks like white lace over a red tablecloth. I mean, that's how much marbling it has. And I think a 4-ounce steak back then was about $100, $120. So if you tried to cook a steak like that directly on the grill, like I'd cook virtually every other steak I ever cooked in my life, the melting fat would just set your grill on fire. So I did what Japanese do, and I put a portable griddle, on my Weber kettle grill over charcoal, and I cooked the steak on that griddle. And it came out great, right? The outside got crusty, the inside was meltingly tender, the fat didn't fall into the fire and set everything on fire. And it was sublime. So, kind of mini light bulb went off. And then I thought, what else can I cook on a griddle? Well, shrimp. Shrimp is always a pain to grill because if you have 30 shrimp, that's a lot of turning unless you make a kebab. So I did shrimp on the griddle, and then I was cooking with some ouzo, the Greek, and I splashed some ouzo on the griddle, and it caught fire. It was very dramatic. You can see the photo in the book. And And that kind of got me thinking about griddles in a serious way. Now, concurrently, Traeger came out with a griddle and Weber came out with griddle. And these are two of the biggest grill companies. Yeah. So that was a second light bulb. I wrote a story for the New York Times about griddling. It was really popular. And then I realized, you know, this is not, you know, a flash in the pan, as it were. This is going to be a major, major outdoor cooking trend.
I remember reading about when the Weber for our kettle grill, when that first came out, it was, oh, my God, this is, it like changes so much.
Yeah.
And it was, and you become almost addicted to it for a while. And at some point you're like, oh, I can go back to actually take it out and go. But one of the things that you mentioned in the book that I think is fascinating, Uzo aside, is that some people just don't like playing with fire. So if you're grilling and all of a sudden the steak takes off and says, I'm gonna incinerate, that you don't have to worry about that when it comes to the griddle.
Absolutely. There's no, you know, in the book, as you will read, there's sort of an apology to all my followers saying, hey, I haven't gone over to the dark side. I still grill. I still love fire and charcoal and wood. But there are foods that you just can't cook on a grill, right? You can't cook pancakes on a grill.
Right.
You can't cook fried eggs on a grill. It's pretty darn hard to cook a grilled cheese sandwich on a grill, even though it's called a grilled cheese sandwich. The transition was pretty, it was easy for me, and I think it was easy for my followers. We started bringing the griddle on in my TV shows. I started incorporating it into my barbecue university curriculum. And I would say this, you know, I'm never going to abandon grilling, but I have a griddle in my backyard, and we use it at least half the time we cook outdoors, which is pretty much every night, because we live in Florida in the winter, so we don't have to deal with Saratoga Springs winter.
Understood. And summer.
However,
yes.
You know what we say?
What?
Like, what really separates the men from the boys? When it snows, what do you shovel first, the path to your car or the path to your grill?
There you go. That's it. I think you know the answer amongst this crowd. That's good. When the book first came out, it was earlier this year in the spring, and I saw you were on CBS, and I saw the interview you did, and good God, Stephen, how many grills do you have in that house?
Well, in Miami, I think we have about a dozen. In Martha's Vineyard, we have 8 or 9. At Barbecue University, we've got 34. But we have this little rule in my household, and that is for every 3 pair of shoes that my wife buys, I get a grill, and her nickname is Imelda.
Oh, well, there you go. But, I mean, and nothing against your wife, but you're using yours also for work, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. So tell me about Barbecue University. Is that like an accredited? What is it? How like or unlike it is from Trump University?
It is very unlike Trump University.
All right, all right.
In fact, everything I do is... No. Anyway, so it's basically... It's like a summer camp for adults who love to grill, but in really luxurious surroundings, because... Early on, my wife said, I will go anywhere that you take me, provided that the thread count on the sheets is higher than what we have at home. So Barbecue University has been in 4 locations. We were at the Greenbrier, we were at the Broadmoor, Montage, Palmetto Bluff. Now we're out in the Alisal Ranch in Sullivan, California. And they're always, you know, you get sweaty grilling in the day, and then at night, beautiful linens, great restaurants. You can play golf in the afternoon. But I'm very serious about the curriculum. And when I plan a menu, like we just finished in September, this session, so I'm thinking about, I want to teach people all 5 methods of live fire cooking. Can you name them?
I can't.
Direct grilling, indirect grilling, smoking, spit roasting, and caveman grilling, where you grill in the embers. I want to teach people how to grill every course of the meal, right? From appetizers, salads, main courses, side dishes, desserts.
Yep.
Also breakfast. Some cocktails, too. I want to show people how to use all of those 34 grills, right? Because some people are going to work on pellet grills. Some people are going to have stick burner. Some people are going to have charcoal grills. By the way, how many people here have a grill, own a grill? This is a very good sign. How many people own more than one grill? See, this is what I'm talking about. In the wake of the barbecue revolution, like 35% of American families own more than one grill. I mean, that's incredible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and you look for them, but they're all for different things. Like, I have a kettle grill. I have a propane grill.
Yeah.
And then I have one of those eggs just because it looks cool.
Because they're cool, right? Big green egg. Great for turkey, by the way. Thanks. Good Thanksgiving's coming up. No, so Barbecue University, I mean, obviously it's fun, but I have a very, there's a pedagogy behind it. And in fact, there's even a final exam. It's an oral exam. And I, at the end of class, I ask the questions that cover all the material, you know, the five methods of live fire cooking, keep it hot, keep it clean, keep it lubricated, et cetera, et cetera. But you're allowed to help the person sitting next to you, right?
Oh.
So everybody passes. In fact, we like to say Barbecue University, where the only marks you get are grill marks.
Very nice. That's good marketing. That's good. And then you'll go from location to location. You'll find another place.
Well, Barbecue University, we tend to stay at one location for 5 or 10 years. So,
oh, all right.
Yeah, so now we're at the Alamo.
So I was getting a White Lotus vibe there for a while.
No. Well, listen, with 34 grills, that's a lot of artillery to move around.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So,
yes.
No, and if you if any of you watched either the last season of my show Project Smoke or the first season of my show Project Fire, those were filmed at the Alisol. So that's a beautiful property. It's a working ranch. They have 125 horses. It's really special. And hope to see some of you out there sometime.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. I was watching recently some of the shows that you did from, I guess, Broadmoor.
Yeah.
And that, what a beautiful place that is.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like my wife to travel with me, and, you know, I can't put her at a Hojo, you know. So.
No, that's right. Yeah, and there's, go to places that have good shoe stores. Now, I always had great respect for you. I'm a guy from Philadelphia. And go Phillies.
Well, also, there's a Philly cheesesteak.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is just stunning. And it's inside out. So how did you describe how you do that?
Well, okay, when you cook a thick sandwich, even like the Cubanos today, and by the way, the food, I don't know if Mr. London is here, Chef London, but I thought the food tonight was spectacular.
It really was, yeah.
And when you do events like this, you know, there's always a moment you would think, how's my food going to come out? Because I'm not cooking it, and because I just flew in yesterday. The food tastes like mine, only better tonight. So I'm really, I was really pleased with that. But when you griddle a thick sandwich, right, I use what I call the divide and conquer method. So I break the sandwich in half, and for the case of the Philly cheesesteak, so it's the bread on the bottom, the meat and the cheese, both sides, and then I also like hot peppers and, you know, mushrooms, and instead of bell peppers, I like poblanos. And then you put a piece of parchment paper on top. You start cooking it parchment paper side down to get the steak and the cheese all sizzly. Then you turn the two halves over, and you cook the bottom so they get crisp. Then you put the whole shebang together. So that's the divide and conquer method.
Yeah, and it's initially maybe it'll look complex, but it's not. It's very intuitive, I thought.
Yeah, it's common sense. But again, you know, when I came to barbecue, it was really a field with a lot of superstition. I do it this way because my daddy did it. I don't think anybody kind of tried to bring a logic to it. I see cooking the way I see language, right? And language is composed of two components, right? There is the words, the vocabulary, and that would be the ingredients. And then there is the way you put them together. That would be the grammar. So what I tried to do in Barbecue Bible was come up with the linguistics of barbecue, as it were. And what I tried to do with Project Griddle was, again, figure out what are the components, what's the logic. So you're going to find methods in the book. I mean, it's much more than just slapping a piece of meat or seafood on a grill. By the way, another reason for griddling, fragile fish like sole or flounder.
Yeah.
Great fish.
Yeah.
You can't grill them. They'll fall apart.
Yeah. And this gives you, and it seems like you have just a little bit more control.
A lot more control. Yeah. It's, although, It is possible to burn foods on a griddle. I've done it. In fact, one of the recipes, you deliberately burn a food on the griddle, controlled burning, and that is the peaches you had today, where you really, you know, for me, it's all about just kind of dancing on a razor's edge. One side is really, really, really well done. The other side is burnt.
Yeah.
And you want to be just on the side of burnt.
And that is, the peaches were so good. And yet, because it, you get that grilled flavor, and yet also it doesn't, it's so much of
a
the
lot
peach
more,
brings out the peach flavor as well.
Absolutely. A lot more control. And you're not working with open flame, you know, which is great. However, if you get a portable griddle and you put it on a Weber kettle grill, for example, and let's say you're griddling a steak or fish, you can put hardwood chunks, hickory chunks on the fire, cook the fish on the griddle, close the lid for a few minutes, and you'll get smoke griddling. So you heard about it here first.
And I'm just guessing that the folks that put out the griddles have to be thrilled that you have a book out on griddling, because, I mean, those are things that you get together. You get the book, and then you get the griddle.
Yeah, well, I would hope so. You know, I'm trying to be ecumenical. I don't work with one particular company.
Yeah.
But I will say that the Weber griddle and the Traeger griddle and the Blackstone, you know, are great. And there are new griddles coming online all the time. And
like, what's the latest in griddle technology?
Okay, that's
like that. Are there people in a lab going, I know what we can do?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, first of all, high-ending the griddle, right? Illuminated heat control knobs. One very important feature is, you know, the stand-up griddles are gas or propane powered, right? So companies go to great length, at least if they're good, to make sure you can see that gas burner is on, because that's something people are frightened of even with gas grilling. Is it really on? Is the burner really on? So with Weber, there's a kind of a sight way that you can look through. There's a new company called Halo that actually put little magnifying glasses in the console so you can look through and see the flame. And I'm going to make a suggestion, by the way. How many
Do
people
you need
have...
that? That's cool, right?
Yeah, it's very cool.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you also want to get a griddle dome, right, which looks like the lid of a wok, because some foods are so thick that you want to cook them from the top down as well as the bottom up. So you put that little griddle dome on, and it enables you to, you know, cook a food that normally would be too thick to cook on a griddle.
I just wanted to say that you, we were having dinner with you, and they served the meatballs,
yeah.
And you know, we were looking at each other. How do we? And then you said, "Do you want to know how to eat these?" And we're like, "Yes." And you gave us a little demonstration.
I did,
and it was fascinating.
Yep.
So you take the lettuce leaves.
Yep.
And then that becomes, as you said, the taco shell ish.
Right. Yep.
You put the
meatball on
the
top.
Meatball on, yep. In there, and then you put another lettuce on.
Well, before that, you put a sprig of mint, a sprig of cilantro, and an imaginary sprig of Thai basil,
and
thinly sliced chilies.
And this was the point where. So this is really why I want to tell the story, because it just amused me. Because Stephen said, well, and then we have the sauce, which was amazing, and then we have peppers, which I'm going to use, or it's like dried...
No, they were, well, I think they may have been in oil, but they were very fiery Thai chilies.
Yes, and he said, well, I'm going to use them liberally because I am a culinary pyromaniac. Isn't that the best term in the world? That is great.
I could have said masochist too.
Well, but man, it was so good. It's what a flavor. Yeah. But that's part of it too, right? I mean, we can have these things, but then having a little nudge every once in a while of telling us easier ways to consume, to eat, to prepare them is key as well.
Absolutely. And it also represents the difference between barbecue in the West and barbecue in the East, right? For us, we like a big hunk of protein in the center of the plate. In Southeast Asia, which is where the origin of that recipe, one steak would feed four people. And you're rounding it out with a ton of fresh vegetables, fresh herbs. You're wrapping it in lettuce leaves. You're dipping it in condiments. And that's the way I love to eat. I, you know, Yes, barbecue, but for me, barbecue health food.
Barbecue legend James Beard, award-winning author and host of PBS's Project Fire, Stephen Reichlin, in a culinary arts at SPAC and WAMC On the Road event on October 7th. The next Culinary Arts at SPAC event is November 15th. You can learn more at SPAC.org, SPAC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.